ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्नस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Tonight we have the great fortune of hearing from the Bhagavad Gita. And why is this great fortune? Because Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in any way that one comes in contact with Krishna, one becomes purified. And this is the goal of human life. The Shastras say, Sarvapati Vinir Muktam Tapratvena Nirmalam Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktir Uchite. And that is, bhakti is called the process through which one purifies one's senses and comes to serve the master of the senses. This is true happiness in life. And this can be attained by touching Krishna. But there are many ways to touch Krishna. If one is touched by Krishna, then one's physical body is transformed into a spiritual body. We can literally touch Krishna in various ways. One of the ways that we can touch him is through worshipping the deity, because there's no difference between Krishna and his transcendental form, especially when that form is worshipped according to the process that is authorized by Krishna himself. God is all-powerful, therefore he reserves the right to reveal himself to his parts and parcels. And he does so in his own way. One of the ways he does it is through the archana padati, or the daily, his daily worship in the form of, that is, he instructs us how to worship him daily through worshiping his form, attending the form of Krishna. And another way that we touch Krishna is through his holy name. When we chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, we're coming directly in contact with Krishna, because there's absolutely no difference between Krishna and his name. The same experience that Prahlad Maharaj had when Lord Nrsingadev placed his lotus hand on Prahlad's head, and the same experience that Dhruva Maharaj had when the Lord touched Dhruva on the head with his transcendental conch shell, is experienced by those who chant the holy names of the Lord without offense. And even when one doesn't chant without offense, in other words, one chants but one's still in an offensive stage, the benefit of chanting is still palpable, especially when one's trying to give up offenses, even though one's still offensive. Also, by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, we come directly in contact with Krishna, because as the Bhagavatam itself claims, Krishna Swadhamo Bhakate Dharmaganadi Visaha Kalo Nasha Drishamesha Pura Narko Dhanuditaha. That just after Lord Krishna, who personally appears in this world in order to give us a pathway back to Godhead, in other words, when he comes to this world, he makes a channel. It's a channel through which we can leave this world and enter the spiritual world. That's why Krishna says, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvata tekva dehim punarjanma naiti ma meti surajana. That if one can understand the nature of Krishna's appearance, that he's transcendental to the material nature, he's an avatara. So this word avatara means someone who travels from upward to downward. And Krishna does that in order to create a channel through which we can leave the lower energy and enter into the higher energy. And if one simply tries to approach Krishna when he comes here and we apply the process that he leaves behind, then Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Daivahi esha gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mameva ye prapadyante maya metam tarantite. We can taranti, or cross beyond the lower region of the material world, the material condition that we've become accustomed to, and we can enter into the higher spiritual energy by approaching him. Prapadyante means often to surrender to, but it also means to approach. Prapadyante. Padya means to step. Prapadyante means to step forward towards, to move towards Krishna. So when we move towards him, then very easily we can cross beyond the material world. I'm naming several ways in which, and these are ways we're very much used to or accustomed to in our daily life in the practice of bhakti, that we can touch Krishna. And we can also realize that he's created a channel for us to leave the material world and enter into the spiritual world. This is mentioned by the Goswamis. Iha yasya harir dasi karmana manasa gira nikila apya vastastu jivan mukta su uchite. That even as we're living in this world, we can enter into the spiritual world. Before we've even left the material body, we can have this experience. Sometimes people are granted a temporary visa. Preliminarily, one gets everyone smiling. I guess you're familiar with these things. You get a visa. And although you may not be fully a part of the country yet that you've entered into, it's the preliminary process. And you're there. And later on, as it becomes secured, when they get a green card and then a citizenship. So in a similar way, by stages, we enter into the spiritual world. Even as we're living in this world, iha means this world, even this body. Iha yasyad hariyadasye kamana manasa gira. Whoever's making garlands here is really doing a good job. And by the process, the processes that I just described, using one's senses, one's speech, iha yasya harida karmana, one's activity, you can use your work, karmana, manasa, your mind, engage your mind in thinking of Krishna, manasa, gira, your words. Then one can actually attain this preliminary visa, entering into the spiritual world, even as we're living in this body. We start to develop our connection, our citizenship in the spiritual world. So the process of bhakti is especially potent in this way because it is the best way in which to approach Krishna, to be directly in contact with him. And even for the neophyte, for the beginner, the experience is palpable. Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janaya Yashuvayara Gyan Gyanam Chayara Haitukam. Krishna says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even as you begin bhakti and perform the direct processes through which you can touch Krishna directly, you'll experience for yourself the concomitant results, which are knowledge and detachment. And similarly, the Srimad Bhagavatam further describes bhakti paryushanu bhavu viraktir anyata traisha trika eka kala. That when one's engaged in the process of approaching Krishna, prapadya manasya yatashnata sus tushti pushti shura payunagasam, one feels for oneself that one's coming closer to Krishna. Bhakti. One feels this expansion of one's potency, love potency. That is, every living entity has the propensity to love. And when we project that love into the material world, it's as if we're stifling it because, well, let me give you an example from the Japanese language. It's actually borrowed from Chinese because the Japanese live so close to China, they borrowed their language. And they've taken the pictographs, otherwise known as kanjis, that describe various phrases or words or concepts. And one of them in Japanese, komaru, which means trouble, is the picture of a tree in a box. Trees don't like to be in boxes, especially if they're enclosed, because they want to expand. So this means trouble. And in a similar way, when our love is confined to the material world, we love not actually other living entities or God, but what our imaginations tell us that person is. Of course, it changes, and then we fall out of love. and our love becomes frustrated here. However, when we love Krishna, Srila Prabhupada points out in the Nectar of Devotion, it's like shining a beam of light out into the universe. Theoretically, it expands unlimitedly. Right? You see the beam of light, it's going like this. And how far can it go? Well, billions of miles. And theoretically, of course, the light's powerful enough, it'll continue to expand outwardly. So when our loving propensity is directed towards Krishna, then it continues to expand, and our happiness expands, because happiness comes from love. It comes from reposing our love in the object of love that can reciprocate and can accept our love properly. So bhakti means that we'll experience that for ourselves. As we give ourselves to the process of bhakti, we'll actually feel more whole. We'll actually feel happy. And then anubhava means we'll directly experience the presence of God within all things. As Krishna says to Brahma in the beginning of the universe, anvaya vyetare kyabhyam yat syat sarvata sarvada. I'm everywhere, I'm within everything, and you should search me out in all times and all places and all circumstances. And for the bhakti yogi, even the neophyte who begins the process of bhakti, he or she experiences the presence of Krishna within everything, experiences Krishna's mercy, and sees how Krishna is directing from within. Tarejati tannayajati tadure tadvantike tarantarasya sarvasya, which means that the Lord is far away but he's very near as well. He's within everything and yet he's outside of everything. And this is something that's directly experienced by the person who's engaged in bhakti. And then virakti anyatra, that a person is able to discriminate between what is superior and what is inferior. We really do get a sense for this because of a higher taste, which comes from approaching Krishna. One who experiences a higher taste, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehina rasavarjam rasopyasya param trishva nivartate. In essence, he's saying here that if you withhold your sense, your senses, for instance, through fasting, this is a well-known technique for monks, that in order to keep their senses from being overly active in the world, they'll fast. And if you fast, then you basically, after a while, you don't feel like doing anything because your senses become inert. And then, of course, they get reinvigorated later when you start to eat again. Nonetheless, even when you're fasting, although your senses may at that time be restrained, Krishna says, rasavarjam rasopyasya, there's something that remains, even though you've restrained them from your sense objects. Rasavarjam, and that is rasopyasya, the taste for the sense objects is still there, it's within the senses. There's a repository of taste within the senses. So it can come out at any time, even though you're restraining them. But he says, when you experience something higher, then you're no longer interested in the lower taste. This is the true test that one's making spiritual advancement. And you can see this for yourself. This is mentioned also in the progressive stages listed by Sutta Goswami at the beginning of the Bhagavatam, when he says, Tada rajas tamo bhava kama lubadayaschaye chetayater anavidam stitam sattve prasidati. You'll be able to see for yourself at that time, tada. Rajastamo bhava, the lower modes of material nature lose their grip on you. They'll ebb away from your senses. And what will be left is your strong impetus to be in contact with Krishna. So this, bhakti parishanu bhava virakti anyatat traisa trika eka kala, means that these three things I just named, which are a sense of love for Krishna, seeing Krishna directly for yourself and within everything, and also being detached, becoming more and more detached from those things that are not in connection with Krishna. They no longer have an interest. you no longer have an interest in them. These three things happen. Chika ekakala, they happen all at all the same simultaneously. They happen by performing the process of bhakti. And then, of course, he gives the example, and it's well known that just in the same way as when you're hungry and you eat food, you become nourished, satisfied, and your hunger goes away. In the same way that it's intuitive, you know for yourself that these things are happening when you eat. That'll happen when you do bhakti also. So the process of direct bhakti yoga is applicable for everybody in all times and all places and all circumstances, and is the most highly recommended method for advancing in devotionals, for advancing in spiritual life, to perform bhakti. Now let's chant for a little bit, because we just came in from various places like Google. Let's see the Google one. And we came from Google, Intel, Cisco, where? Visa. Really? And Google, you read Google today too. And from the high school, right? There's a lot going on out there, so it's good to come in and chant for a while. We're looking at the verse in the second chapter of the Gita, number 62, that begins Jayato. Jayato vishayan punat sanjayate kama. Kamat krodho bijayate. So the first word, jayataha, which means while contemplating. Jayataha, while contemplating. Please look up the word contemplating. So there are people who are known as contemplatives. They spend their time contemplating, but it has the in that context, it really means they're looking inwardly, they're contemplating the meaning of life and so forth. We're contemplators by nature, because that's what conscious living entities do. Here's the meaning of contemplation.
It's a verb which means to look thoughtfully for a long time at something.
Well, that sounds like TV. I mean, not so thoughtfully. I mean, there are ways in which our mind is carried away, and these couple of verses that we're looking at tonight describe the ways in which the mind can be carried away. One of the ways is that the senses by nature are out there. They're part of the world in a sense, because they have a mind of their own. That in the sense, as described by the Hamsa avatar, we find in the 12th canto, or I can't remember, it's the 11th or the 12th canto, the Bhagavatam. You can look it up. 11th canto, can you grab it? And there, Hamsa avatar describes how when we come into the world, our senses are naturally attracted to sense objects, and then the way he describes it is the senses are embedded within their objects, and the objects are embedded within the senses. They have a natural relationship. There are a lot of various objects to look at in this world and to contemplate. And the senses do that naturally. They're attracted to their objects. For instance, if you see a beautiful person, just in the course of your walking down the street, what do your eyes do? If you're honest. Huh? And they naturally go after it, that you know, attractive scene. You know, some forms are more attractive than others. And, of course, there are different kinds of attraction. We're attracted to ghastly scenes also. People are driving down the freeway and there's a horrible accident on the side. The reason the traffic slows down is not so much because, I mean, unless all the lanes are blocked, but it's because everyone takes their time to, you know, an extra few seconds to have a look. And then there's what's called the multiplier effect. It works not only in economics, but also in traffic jams. It adds up over time. Pretty soon you're an hour late. Yes, everyone's got to take a look. We're interested in what, thank you, Mr. Pundit. We look around and we see things in this world. Yeah, okay. The Hamsa avatar answers questions. So it's in this section. Can you see that particular purport? Is that what you turned me to? It is. So contemplation again, Shraddha means? Sorry, she's also trying to search for that specific place, and I'm bringing her back to the contemplate. Yes?
It also means to think about.
No, do the first one again.
Okay, look thoughtfully for a long time.
To look thoughtfully for a long time.
At something.
At something.
And the next one is think about.
Think about.
Think profoundly and at length. That is meditate.
Think profoundly and at length.
And then also have in mind as a probable, though not a certain intention. For example, she was contemplating a gold mining venture.
Okay, so you have some intention in mind by looking at something. You're thinking, maybe there's something in it for me.
And the origin?
Yes, please.
The origin is late 16th century from Latin, contemplat, which means surveyed, observed, or contemplated. From the verb contemplare, which is based on templum, which is a place for observation.
Oh.
And I was just thinking
templum. A physical place from which people made observations, mm-hmm. Is that sort of referring
templum,
to?
Templum, yeah, from templum. And I'm just wondering that.
Templum means?
Yeah. Templum is the
Is it? It's a something in Rome at the time?
Yeah.
A templum was an observation place for the stars or for the.
I'm just looking it up.
Jayato. Anything? Okay. In any case, we get the basic idea, you know, that it comes from a Latin word, and there was a physical place somewhere in Rome, a part of Roman society, where people would observe something. And it's come to mean when one looks at things thoughtfully with some intention. And we do that. We look around, yes.
So templum is actually a temple, a shrine, or a sacred place.
A temple, a shrine, of a sacred place.
An open area, especially for augury.
For what?
Augury. Augury. And I'm looking up augury. A-U-G-U-R-Y.
Okay.
So augury is a divination based on the appearance and behavior of animals, or an omen or prediction.
Okay. Yeah, they had such things in Rome at that time, the divinations. They would go to, in fact, they would do sacrifices at that time in the temples to various gods. And then there were these kind of priests, they would pull the entrails out from the animals. And then they would look at them, and according to the configuration of the entrails, they would be able to tell the future and say, you know, things are going to be like this or like that. Thank you. And so that was an area in which they did things like that. You can see the origin of the word. So to study something, to examine it, to look at it, and according to our value system, which is really based on the modes of nature we've acquired in this world, we'll find certain things more interesting than others. And we find this, especially I'll point to the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. At the very beginning of the 17th chapter, Krishna describes how it is, because Arjuna's inquiry in text number 1, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scriptures but worship according to their own imagination, are they in goodness and passion or ignorance? And Krishna says, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, and passion, or ignorance. Now hear about this. And in 3, he says, O son of Bharata, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired. So when we acquire various modes, how do you do that? Acquire modes. By how? Okay, use the mic.
By associating with those particular modes of nature.
Prove it.
If I'm engaged.
Sanskrit. Like Purusha Prakriti story. So in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Purusha Prakriti Stohi Bhunte Prakriti Jangunan Karanam Guna Sangasya Sarasadyoni Janmasu. That we acquire various modes by our Sangha, as Prabhu is pointing out to us here. So this is the way we acquire various modes. And when we do acquire various modes, we develop a particular faith or value system about the world because of the modes we have. Some people say, I'm a Republican. Some people say, I'm a Democrat. I like jazz. I like Bollywood. This is because of, make no mistake, the modes of material nature we've acquired. That person next door, they're building a house. They're almost done, thank goodness. The workers there are from Mexico. They like Mexican music. I don't particularly. I mean, I don't mind it so much, but it's when I hear it, it's not like my ear goes like, wow, cool. You know, I'm like, that's really weird. Because of my conditioning, the modes that I have acquired by association in this lifetime, past lifetimes, and so forth. And therefore, the things that we contemplate will vary. The things that we consider valuable that we look at and we think, oh, this something's here for me. So this is an important concept, jihayato, the while contemplating. So we can adjust our lives by noticing what we're contemplating because where attention goes, energy flows. And whatever we're looking at will have a consequence. Whatever we contemplate, whatever we spend our time thinking about, we're going to go there. Literally, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Yanti deva vrta devan, pitrin yanti pritir vrta, bhutan yanti bhuteja, yanti mam, yajinopi mam. If you worship the various demigods, you'll go there. If you worship the ancestors, you can go there. It's a whole absorption. People get into the ancestors. They do it a lot in various cultures. Really contemplate, and they even want to go there. We find in the Bhagavatam similar things. People want to go and be with their ancestors. I wouldn't necessarily want to be with mine so much, but I mean, it was nice knowing you and everything, but enough's enough. So, where we contemplate, we'll have the effect that we'll transfer ourselves there, literally. In fact, you can feel how you transfer yourself by where you look just by driving down the road. I don't necessarily recommend you try this as homework, but you can relate to it if I tell you. Say you're driving down the freeway, and then, or you're like a passenger in the car, because I don't want to advocate taking your eyes off the road, but just say you're driving down the road, you're the passenger in the car, and there's somebody driving next to you on the freeway. What if you look over and you start looking at them like this in the car? What'll happen? They'll turn and say, get out of here. Get out of my car, basically they're saying, you know, like, what are you doing in my car? All you're doing is looking, but you actually go in there. That's why they freak out so much is like, say, you have no right to come in here. And how did you do it? You just looked over there. So our glance is very powerful, just as Krishna's glance is powerful. Ours isn't just as Krishna's unlimited, and ours is limited, but there's a very similar effect. When Krishna glances over the material world as Mahavishnu, the whole thing starts up, the energy starts, and the living entities start to interact with the material nature and so forth. The time element is started in the material world and so forth. So jayato is very important. So now Krishna is saying in this particular verse, jayato vishayan is the second word. So vishayan means sense objects. So we describe the sense objects, and let me see what we've got here, just as a description. The sages headed by Sanaka said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Oh, yes, 11:13:17. 11:13:17. With special kudos to our pundits in the front row who found it, headed by Mukharvinda. The sages headed by Sanaka said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects. And similarly, the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us. Do you find that fascinating? I find it really fascinating. It explains a lot, too. Because for yogis, those who are doing this dharanam, this is one of the aspects of Ashtanga. Dharanam means hold on. It means once you've brought your senses under control, then hold on to them. Don't let them run, because they'll take off on you if you're not careful. And so, why is it that they're so attracted to various sense objects? It's good to know. And also, not to blame yourself so much that why can't I control my senses? One of the most frequently asked questions people bring is that, I try to chant, but my mind takes off on me. Duh. I mean, that's what happens. That's what the mind does. It's there in all the shastras. The mind goes. It takes off. The Yoga Sutra says this is the whole issue. The mind is controlled by vrittis. It means it takes off. Vritti is cognate in English with the word vert. Like you say convert, invert, extrovert, and so vert. It comes from vrit in Sanskrit, which means to turn. So in the Yoga Sutra, for instance, it says the mind is always turning. And that's what it does. And it's not necessarily a good thing. Prajahati dakaman sarvan partha manogatan. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, when one comes to the stage of self-realization, first thing is he knows how to turn off this cycling of the mind. It's constantly moving. Thank you for the sound effects. It's constantly moving, and it's manufacturing all kinds of ideas for sense gratification. And especially nowadays, it's the process is probably sped up because of scrolling. Because you're scrolling. I mean, it's kind of like what the mind does anyway. It scrolls, you know, it's like ring. But when you start doing it externally also, it gets the mind going a little faster. It's like you scroll, and then the mind, it has no resting place at all. So prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. A self-realized person is able to hold back that process of vrit, of constantly turning of the mind, scrolling. We could call vritti the vrit, the scrolling. If the mind's always scrolling through. So jayato vishayan, and what's it scrolling through in the material world? Sense objects. I like this, I don't like that. And it's looking, is this for me? Can I enjoy this or not? And this is the nature of the mind, and the senses take off on us. And then the mind takes off after the senses. So, that's good. That's a nice verse. So, jayato vishayan pumsa. So, pumsa is means of a person. So, this is jayato vishayan pumsa, of a person who's contemplating the senses. So, that could be anybody. Sangha, attachment. So literally this means that it becomes part of you, attachment, because a sangha is, an anga means a part, and sa-anga means it becomes one of your parts, just like your hand is a part of your body, it's an anga. And similarly, when you look now at the various sense objects, sangha, you develop a sangha. Like, okay, now that's me. Ever go and try on a coat in a shop? Somebody goes, ooh, that's really you. Those shoes, those are really you. And you develop a sangha. Like, that's part of me. This is my identity now. I wear red shoes. And or you get a car and you think, this is really me, you know, it's like, I'm not an Audi person, I'm more of a, you know, I like to drive a Hugo. I don't know if they make those anymore. It was the worst car ever made. It's from Yugoslavia. You know, you identify with a particular car. My father was a professor, and he had a professor friend, Steve Rauch. He just recently passed away, but, you know, he used to drive this old, not like he couldn't afford a nice car, but it was the 60s, and he had an old beat-up VW Bug. The door was practically falling off. And it was kind of like a professor look, you know, a beat-up old car. He was a psychologist, and he'd drive around. And it was kind of a look, you know. He dressed in a certain way. He'd drive a certain kind of car. He developed this sangha with various objects of the world. And it's like, this is me. This is part of me. And in the same way, we develop a sangha with this entire body. We consider, this is me. But it's not. One living entity is thinking I'm a cat, the other one's thinking I'm a dog, and they really think they are. And the human being thinks I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm an Indian, I'm America. This sangha takes place. So we actually are not compatible with matter, but because it's one of the energies of the Lord, and we look at it, we contemplate it, it looks like it should be kind of nice, only it's a fake out, and we get attached to it. Then what happens? Sanghas teshu, in the sense objects, upajayate. We develop sanghat. We develop sangha, an attachment. It develops. So this is what will happen if you contemplate various objects. You will develop a sangha with them. Is that clear? Let's discuss that for a minute before we move on to the second part of the verse. Any reflections from what we've talked about so far? Reflect back. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I like the very first point you mentioned, that the true progress, like true spiritual progress, can be measured by, you know, how much taste you are losing towards sense gratification.
How much taste what?
You are losing towards sense gratification. So,
yes.
Like naturally it...
You should be able to see that for yourself. That you'll observe the fact that the sense objects don't have as much sway on you. And this is a miracle. Because people try all kinds of ways to become detached from the material worlds, artificially even. That's why people like intoxication. Take intoxication, and for a little while, like, I really don't care about anything. It's, you know, no big deal to me. Hey, you just cut off your toe. Who cares? It's kind of an artificial detachment from the world. But it comes back again. And to actually give it up, it's very attractive, actually. Those who are not attached to the external world. It's a great opulence to be able to have that. And it comes from transferring one's attention to Krishna. You develop this mystic power. This is the greatest of all mystic powers, to be able to detach oneself from gross sense gratification. I was walking down the street the other day. Forget where I was. Oh, I know where it was. It was at the BART station when we got back from distributing books. There were a bunch of kids getting off. I guess they were shopping or whatever. They were with their family. You know, kids talking together. And one of them was saying to the other, as they were jostling each other and goofing around, said, "Oh, that's gross." Have you ever heard that?
Yes.
Gross. Try it.
Gross.
That's really gross. Gross, what does gross mean? We say it all the time when we were kids. I remember growing up, that was a popular word, gross. Kids say it nowadays in high school, gross. Now listen what it means, actually.
It's still trending. So gross is an adjective, especially of wrongdoing, very obvious and unacceptable, blatant. And then gross, other meaning also, like without deduction of tax or other contributions like that. It also means very rude or coarse, vulgar. unattractively large or bloated.
What was the one before that?
Very rude or coarse.
Rude or coarse, yeah. Okay. Rude or coarse, the material energy in general is rude or coarse from the perspective of the subtle living entity. As Krishna describes in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, we're very subtle, and we actually never really mix with the material energy. But when we observe it, you know, you see things and you're like, oh, that's gross. The material body's gross. I mean, if you squish your finger or something like that, you know, it's like, oh, gross. You know, stuff's coming out of it. I mean, there's a lot of ways that it's gross. We try to conjure some image that it's actually nice or beautiful or anything like that. But that's a mental construct, because we're trying to see the world the way it really isn't. We're seeing it in a different way. We say, oh, that's really nice, but it's gross. So we notice these things because we're subtle. If we weren't subtler, we wouldn't say gross. We wouldn't notice it. We'd say, oh, that's subtle. That's sublime. So when we come in contact with the sublime and we become more refined, we start to notice the grossness of the material world. I'll give you a temporary example. If you ever fast, or if you fast like Ekadashi or something like that, when you, maybe you've had this experience, but it happens to me all the time. I fast for a day, and then the next day, I look at food and I go like, do I really have to eat anymore? I mean, it's so troublesome, actually, in a way. I mean, not that I don't like to eat. I do, but there's this subtlety I notice that I'll look at the food and I'll go like, oh God, it's got weight and size, and you know, do I have to deal with it even? And people who leave their bodies temporarily, they you know, they flatline, they leave their body, they hover above the body for a little while. This happens; it's documented. And then it wasn't their time, so they come back in the body. They're revived. They come back. Satyadev Prabhu was telling me about this. Since then, I looked it up. There's lots of documentation. And people recount what happened when they were in that condition. And so many of them say, oh, I felt light and subtle. And I looked down at the body and I was thinking, I don't want to come back in there. Because we're really, the body is gross and we're not. We're subtle. So we develop, as subtle living entities, a sangha with this gross material energy by looking at it and contemplating it. And there's this misunderstanding that actually it's for me and that I can be compatible with it. So when I look at it, I develop this connection with it. So upajayate, that develops over time, and that's our problem. So this problem is described in the Bhagavatam. Bhayam dvitiya binibesha tasyad ishad apetasya viparya yosmiti. The Bhagavatam says, Kavi Havi. Havi Yogendra says that this, or is it Kavi? Kavi Yogendra says that when you develop this connection with the material energy and you start projecting that this is me, so he calls this dvitiya. You've developed a second existence that isn't real. You're actually the observer, but you think that you're the observed. In other words, you look in the mirror and you think, I'm this body. But you're not. You're the observer, the person who's looking out and seeing the body. You're the subject, not the object. And when this happens, he said, then you become fearful. Your life becomes full of fear and anxiety because you're connected with something that doesn't, that won't hold. So, bhayam dvitiya abhinibeshita syad. Bhaya syad means fear arises from this mistaken misidentification. That's a double negative. So, what it is we look and we mistakenly think I'm this body or I belong to the material nature. That's what causes all our problems, in case you wanted to know. Then, ishad apetasya viparyosmiti, we get in a reverse mentality. Our real eternal identity is that we're admirers of the original divine source of our life, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then we become competitors, and we think, because I have this form, and I am an enjoyer of the senses and so forth, we get in a reversed condition of life, and I think that I'm the center, I'm the source of everything. And then we're in a competitive mode with the Supreme. And we come up with all kinds of philosophies, like there is no Supreme, or that I'll become the Supreme later, or so many other different varieties of this. And this is called Viparyayosmiti. It's the wrong-headed attitude towards life. And that wrecks everything. So that's the problem. So, Jayato Vishayan Pungsa Sangas Teshu Pajayate. Other reflections about what we've talked about so far. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I was just, many times this question or maybe my thought has come to my mind. How my mind is always the problematic. You know, it's the root cause of all the problems, I think. So, I wonder, like, if there is any way I could just switch it to one direction and remain in like that only, always, in full consciousness. Is it possible to do
it? Yeah, it is, but it takes practice. So, you know, we want to do it instantly, but because of thinking in one way for many lifetimes, we really do have some scars or impressions that we have to dissolve over time. And we have to transfer gradually from one position to the next. So Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that the ideal situation is just always think of me. The only way you can do that is if you have a sense of love. When you love somebody, it doesn't matter what else is happening around you, you'll be thinking of that person. And you won't even notice the external circumstances, whether they're good or bad, because internally you're actually meditating on that person. And this is the pinnacle of bhakti, when you have this much love for Krishna that you can't help thinking of him. In fact, it's described by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur at the different stages of thinking of Krishna. There's ruchi, and after ruchi there's asakti, which means attachment. In ruchi, there's the way in which the nectar starts to flow because you have a taste for thinking of Krishna. And so, in that situation, it's very easy for you to bring your mind away from material things and think of Krishna. And then, when you go to the next level, which is called asakti, what's it called? Then, when it's very difficult for you to think of material things at all because your mind's always attached to Krishna. So you actually have to pry your mind away from thinking of Krishna in order to apply it to straightforward dealings in the material world, he describes. So these are psychological states that relate to the advancement of Krishna consciousness, and they're very real. In the beginning, we may not have this. Therefore, Krishna says, since you may not have this automatic attraction for Krishna out of love, and it hasn't awakened fully in you yet, he said, then practice the tenets of bhakti yoga. So we come to the temple. I saw one gentleman here when he first came in, and he was sitting just looking at the deities. And it's very nice. He's just sitting there looking. You know, probably his parents taught him how to do that. This is part of the culture. You know, you come in, bow down, and just sit and look. Smell the incense, put something in the hundi, you know, take some charnamrita and things like that. So these are the principles of vidhi bhakti, practicing. So you have to practice. And how much do you have to practice?
A lot.
You have to practice a lot and for a long time before the mind will start to like, oh, that was pretty nice. You know, if you have an incident where you're practicing bhakti because of the rules. The shastra says, do this. So you go like, okay, I don't want to do it because the mind's like a little brat. You know, it's like, how about we do this? And you go, no, I don't want to do it. That's the mind. And then through buddhi, through your intelligence, you go like, no, I read the shastra and I know this is good for us. You know, like, no, I don't want to. But you do it anyway. And then somehow or other along the line, you know, just it almost seems like a free gift. You get this experience like, wow, that was really nice. Like, even, you know, just a fleeting little touch with some sublimity, where you feel like, I really heard Krishna's name that time. I felt something. You know, that is the most valuable thing you can get in life. And you, by practicing bhakti, then you start to get these little impressions that this is really something sweet. And gradually, gradually over time, when we practice the tenets of vidhi bhakti, we start to get attached and we start to develop this love. So then Krishna says, if you can't practice this vidhi bhakti, because some people aren't as fortunate that they can even do any kind of vidhi bhakti, he said, then just work. But consider your work to be for Krishna. And how do you do that? Not just by mental speculation. You actually have to give away the result of your work. At least some of it. You have to pry it out of your hands. Like, no, I don't want to give it. You know, it's like, you have to. I'm like, all right. And then you give something. And then you notice that, wow, I survived. I'm still alive. Because in the dark survival mode that I'm in here in the material world, I think, like, if I give up anything, I'm going to die. And so you give it up, and then you feel like, I didn't die. Actually, I feel better. And someone comes along and says, wow, you're a big human being. You're able to give away something. You feel like, wow, that felt pretty good. And then Krishna says, if you can't give to Krishna some of the results of your work, then just try to give to somebody. Like, be charitable, because that will start in the thinking process that by giving I grow. And then he gives some other processes that if you can't even do that, then practice meditation, giving up the fruits of your work. There's various ways, he says, try to come closer to this concept of remembering, thinking of Krishna. And so we've been blessed by Lord Chaitanya, and through the disciple succession we have this process of Sankirtan. You chant Hare Krishna, and you also distribute the holy name to other people, things like that. It's a very effective way to come in contact with Krishna. But you have to practice. And that's the whole point. And go through the practice, and as you do, you'll gradually come to the point where your mind becomes naturally attracted to Krishna. Then you're on the safe side. Okay, then you were next, Shraddha. It was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay.
So 2 points, Maharaj. One was that continuing on with the material energy being rude and coarse.
Yes.
You had said that when love is confined to the material world, it can get frustrated. But if it's directed to Krishna, then it expands and goes to...
That's right.
Like that.
Yeah.
And the second thing was that what you mentioned right in the beginning, and in the transcendental, it looks like the subtle and the coarse are the same, because you said that you get the same effect from chanting the holy names as what Dhruva Maharaj got from a more grosser thing of being touched by the conch shell, or Prahlad Maharaj being touched by the hand. So,
well, actually, my point wasn't that was a grosser thing. I was saying it's the same thing. Because I read it this morning in the eighth canto of the Bhagavatam. Maybe I read it on our meeting, but what Prabhupada was saying is there's no difference between Lord Nrsingadev placing his lotus hand on Prahlad's head, and Dhruva Maharaj, Prishnigarbha, placing his conch shell on Dhruva Maharaj's head, and us touching the deity, or even hearing and chanting about Krishna. There's no difference. And if you go on doing that, you'll find that you're inextricably being purified. Why? Because you're touching Krishna. So go on touching Krishna, and there are these 9 processes of practice. And out of 64 items of specific detailed practice that you can perform, 5 are particularly important. But if you make sure that you're coming in contact with Krishna every day through these processes, it's inevitable that you'll become purified by the touch. Thank you so much. Nice points. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Who is next?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I was going to say that on the Sangha part of the object, when you look at an object, and it happens to me all the time, I start contemplating, even to the extent, okay, how am I going to use the object? So, and the mind is always drawn towards that and just more and more get attracted towards it. Sometimes we go for the shopping, we look at it, anything, maybe a jacket, and you start thinking, okay, how does it look on me? And sometimes we go to a dressing room also to put it on. So
yeah.
how the mind gets absorbed in the object.
Yeah. And did you ever get it home and then everyone goes like, that looks terrible. What were you thinking? Yeah, and it's material is uncomfortable. Nothing ever comes out just quite the way we thought it would. And so we get attached to these things that are gross and they cause us some consternation, to say the least. Okay, that was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're four. Go ahead.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I like the point you mentioned about that our glance is also powerful.
Yes.
And Krishna's glance is powerful and our glance is also powerful. And the example you gave of driving on the freeway, and if someone looks in somebody else's car and then the passenger says, get out of my car. Really drove home the point. So it was very nice.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it anywhere. But you just walk along the street. If you look at somebody, they're like, what? You actually go there through your glance.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Five. Yes.
It's a quick note. After she read the definition of growth, and it was the word rude was used in there. While I was in Italy, I asked somebody, I'm like, because I wanted to apologize for something that I'd done, and I wanted to know how to say, oh, I've been rude. And he was like, that doesn't actually translate. But the only word that they use that translates for that is maleducated.
Oh.
Like you're poorly educated. So I just thought that was an interesting point to bring in for gross.
Yeah.
You're not well educated.
So you're not acquainted with the various categories of energy properly. As when we have sambandha gyan, we understand each category of energy. There are various categories mentioned in the Shastra, for instance. The Vishnu Purana says, Vishnu Shakti Para Prokta Kshetra Gyakya Tatapura Vidya Karma Samgyanya Tritya Shakti Rishite. So it names three categories of energies. There's the spiritual energy, then there's the external energy, and then there's the marginal energy. And you have to know which is which. This is knowledge. And also knowing the difference, and this is similar, Krishna says in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra Gnam Chapi Mam Viti Sarva Kshetri Shu Parata Kshetra Kshetra Deyor Gyanam Yatach Gyanam Matambama. So this is my opinion, this is what knowledge is, he says. That to know the difference between the field, which is this body, interesting thing to call it, and the knower of the field. And then to know the knower, that there's a knower in all bodies, so this is knower of all the different fields. This is called knowledge. So having that knowledge is sambandha gyan, this situates one in a way that one isn't obligated to contemplate the wrong category of energy. Otherwise, one's maleducated, and we become implicated by looking at the wrong things. I mean, when we become a little educated on where the pitfalls are in the material energy, we're careful. And we may look around at the society that's not oriented towards spiritual progress, and we'll see people all the time contemplating things that are obviously not good for them. For instance, the whole duty-free industry. I don't know who thought of this. But if you walk into the Delhi airport, I'm annoyed by it. I'm actually annoyed by it. Going in and out of Delhi airport, they force you to go through duty-free shop. And it's even longer getting out of there than it is going in. I mean, it's a maze you have to walk through. And there's all these, ridiculous pictures. They mostly pictures of women, scantily dressed, and then they're holding up a bottle of something. It's either whiskey or it's a perfume or something like that. And then the idea is, you know, it's like, hey, look at this, contemplate this, and then you'll buy it, and you'll think, this is me. And how did I get onto that? Maleducated. It's giving the wrong impression to the living entities. Why subject them to that? Unless you're trying to exploit people and using the wrong kinds of techniques to bewilder them. This is what goes on in the material world, this kind of exploitation. So unless we become educated ourselves about the categories of energy, where to place our attention and where not to place, what not to contemplate in this world, then we'll become victimized. This verse is pointing it out. You'll definitely become victimized because we're small against the power of the external energy. And unless we fortify ourselves with knowledge and the practice of seeing higher forms, associating with higher, more sublime energy, by default, we'll have to look at the material world. Because of the first verse I read, that the senses, I'll read it again, just to refresh our memory. This is from 11:13-17. The sages headed by Sanaka said, O Lord, people's minds are naturally attracted to material sense objects, and similarly the sense objects in the form of desire enter within the mind. Therefore, how can a person who desires liberation, who desires to cross over activities of sense gratification, destroy this mutual relationship between the sense objects and the mind? Please explain this to us. Okay, who is next? That was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Then we have from the internet, and then we have Shyamalungi. Right behind you. You have from the internet? Okay.
So this is Sundarananda Prabhu.
Who is
Sundarananda.
It? Sundarananda. I was just missing him. Thank you.
There he is.
Making our day, Sundarananda Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you for the insightful class. As you were discussing about Sangha, I was thinking about how we closely identify with the mind, thinking the mind to be ourselves. So we follow its dictation, thinking it's coming from ourselves. Quoting one of Chaitanya Charan Prabhu's title, we should identify the mind and not identify with the mind, and train the mind in Krishna consciousness by experiencing a higher taste. Bhagavad Gita 6.5 says that one must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. And then he quotes Bhagavad Gita 2.59, though the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyments, the taste from sense object remains. But seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness.
Thank you for such a nice contribution, Sundarananda Prabhu. And somehow or other, we're dragging ourselves around without your association here.
So after Suryakunda Prabhu commented on the jacket, you know, how the mind is attracted, I was just thinking that, you know, it's like a trap. It's not even what we are seeing in this life and contemplating. It's been from so many millions of birth. I was just thinking that the mind, like, it has no dearth of, no lack of space and memory. It's like been collecting on top of another and the lower ones. And then it flashes to us, while maybe when we're chanting, so many things come to our mind. Maybe it's from so many previous births. And it's like, you know, on the internet, like you say, those ads, they flash, take a free this. And so its mind is like such a garbage. It seems like that.
Yeah, it collects in there. Krishna mentions this in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita when he calls it Purva Samskar. So we have impressions from previous lives that accumulate. And then those have to be purified, and that can be done through the process of bhakti, especially chanting the holy name of the Lord. As Kapiladev says to Devahuti, who says, how can I get over this? You know, she really laments. She said, this is serious. She realizes how serious it is because I'm really trapped by this. I contemplate the object of senses based on my past conditioning and I get more entangled and then I have to take another life. Samsriti means I'm being dragged from one lifetime to the next because of the way I'm contemplating. So how do I get out of this? She said, this seems impossible. And Lord Kapiladeva encourages her. He said that the process of bhakti is so powerful that just as food is digested in the stomach, so similarly, these samskaras will be digested by the process of bhakti, and they'll be gradually eliminated. So it's important to apply oneself to the process of bhakti. And that's not as hard as any other process, because most processes don't have a positive place to offer us to place our contemplation. Like, if you just think of your breath or a candle flame or nothing, for that matter, just clear your mind, good luck with that. It will not be as successful as if you say, qualify yourself for deity worship. Come to the position where you can take diksha and then get involved in deity worship. Addressing your deities, you can get a taste for that, where you actually see the smiling face of Krishna. Kapiladeva talks about this, how the devotees, even the neophyte devotees, those are Kanishta Adhikaris, he says they're imperceptibly liberated because they come to the temple to see Krishna. That's where they see Krishna. They don't see him yet in the hearts of other living beings. They just see him in the temple and they say, I got to get to the temple and see Krishna. So they actually relish coming in, and when they walk in, they ring the bell, and then they offer obeisances, and they smell the incense. And the incense goes in, and they go, God, that's nice. That's a relief. And then they see Krishna, and he's decorated in a beautiful way. His form is beautiful. Everything about him is sublime. And then they think, oh, this is nice. And at that point, they're imperceptibly liberated from the material energy. That's how powerful bhakti is. Well, to speak of those who develop the propensity for devotional service, and then they qualify themselves to do deity worship. You know, if you go on the altar late at night to put the Lord to rest, make him a little hot milk, put him in his bed. I mean, it's charming. You take the deity and you put him in his bed, and you put pajamas on and stuff like that. You go to bed thinking like, wow, I feel happy. You actually have, your contemplation is naturally there towards Krishna, because bhakti is very personal, and you can develop this sense of affection for the deity. So this is a very practical way in which the whole population can become oriented towards contemplating those spiritual objects, specifically the form of Krishna, and things in relationship with Krishna that are very beautiful and sublime. That's why Prabhupada emphasized also a cultural conquest. He wanted art, and he wanted beautiful dramas. And when you go into a drama about Krishna, you just sit there and watch. Like, this is fun. Like, when I was growing up in school, whenever we had a movie, which was a rare thing back then, because you had to actually bring in the projector, and they had film and the whole thing, that was like the biggest coup you could have, because you didn't have to sit there and listen to the boring teacher talk. You could just watch a movie. It was like fun. And bhakti is like that all the time, because you get to have singing, dancing, and seeing beautiful things, music, plays. And all this is very favorable for transferring one's attention to Krishna. And if you like literature, you're really lucky, because bhakti has a lot of literature. That if you like to read, then you're really in luck, because you can start reading all these books and hearing. I mean, the Mahabharata was specifically written to catch our attention. And then within that, you've got Bhagavad Gita to give us a straight dose of philosophy. And people are so averse to it in the age of Kali Yuga, so Vyasadeva said, okay, give them some stories. You need the Puranas to teach you by hearing allegories and all kinds of stories and things like that. Did you? You did yours? Okay. 1, 2.
Yesterday I read a thought for the day from His Holiness Lokanath Swami's quotes, and it mentioned one becomes attached and entangled simply by contemplating.
Yes. So much to the point. Become attached by contemplating. Yeah.
So, to your point, as you mentioned, the duty-free shops, the way they design to trap the people, I see our natural propensity to me is, even if we identify something which we like, we naturally go there. So, but even from the shopping case, especially in the Costco, it's interesting the, how they design the things. So the most frequently used item, which you really want to pick and get out, they actually shift intentionally by design, so that you look around where it is, and by the time you look around, you see 100 other things, and you want to buy only one item, you end up buying 100. So it's a I was really surprised why they are doing it. Then I asked the question. They said we do it by design. So just to add to complication,
the secret, huh?
The complication over complications. We want to keep it simple. I want to grab that stuff and get out, but then you're stuck by design.
Yeah. The whole material world is compared to a forest of enjoyment in the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. A forest of material enjoyment. It becomes entangling.
It's just related to how you said that the process of bhakti is so powerful that it will digest the samskaras that we have developed. So I always think that this question whether I'm going backward or forward in Krishna consciousness, but one positive thing that I noticed is every year we go for this Harinam, the contemplation would be like, because when I came from India and I saw this all these sale during the Thanksgiving and so many things you get for half the price, the mind used to contemplate on when you would go there, what time you will go, what you'll buy. So even when I go to Harinams, previously many years, I used to contemplate, when will this Harinam be over? So I can which shop and all I can go on the way before I come home. But then this time I came from Harinam and I was very grateful to Krishna that not even a single thought was there. And that was so relieving because it was so painful that so much money, so much anxiety, so much I have to make plans. But I was really thankful to Krishna to take that desire away from my heart that I could just go to Harinam and come back.
It's very encouraging. So if one notices these things, you think, oh, this is Krishna's mercy, that he's helping me in these ways. And it's such a great relief to not have an obligation to the material world. Of course, we do our duty and we go through whatever we have to do at the different stages of our life to maintain ourselves externally, but internally we become more and more used to depending on Krishna for the outcome for all these things. And also, tena tyaktena bhunjita. Just considering this verse today, is people come in the material world, they get overheated. They start thinking, I have to enjoy this. And it's a lot of trouble to maintain a big government system that controls big areas of land, like the United States. You know, once you claim something, it's yours. It's like we claim this group of islands, they're ours. Even if you're not even going to go there, you still, now you have to protect them in case somebody else is going to come in and take it over. And all your energy, your resources start going towards protecting it. So whether it's on the scale of a big government taking over an island or us grabbing on to some idea that I have to have this, it's the same thing. And then we become attached to it, then we have to protect it, we go through so much work. It's such a relief to realize that Krishna is maintaining me. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. He gives me what's naturally necessary for me to survive. And therefore, let me give my attention towards serving him. This is called Shraddha. Shraddha shabde vishwas kahi surida nishchoy krishne bhakti kole sarva karma krita hoy. Sarva karma krita hoy. All other things are done properly and sufficiently when I give myself to the process of bhakti. Krishna will do it. He'll take care of me. Yogakshemam bahamyaham, naturally. This growing realization, how he's doing that. Was there one more? Okay, yes.
So, I just want to say that I was reading, like, how many books I have read, even Zen, Mindfulness, or recently I was reading a book for Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, and he had also mentioned an instance, like he mentioned the word Bhagavad Gita, and he has said that, so it helps me when I'm working, it says that when you don't think about what you are getting out of the work, you just think on the how you're doing it, like on the process of doing the work. And you don't think of the outcome, and that's what he says that it's mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. So I was thinking when you were giving the lecture that however books we read or how much I read, like in the first page also it says like watching the mind or watching the observer, it's like observing the mind. It helps you. When you chant, and once you do that chanting for half an hour, or meditate, like I did with Mataji once, I don't know her name, and that kind of helps you out, and you just get out of your mind. Like it just helps you clean your mental thoughts which were there from the day. Yeah, just wanted to say.
Yeah, very important points you make. Thank you so much. First of all, this idea that Krishna propagates throughout the Bhagavad Gita, essentialized in the verse Karmanye Varikaraste Mapali Shukadachana, the Karma Pala Hetu Bur Mate Sangustu Karmani, says you have a right to perform your prescribed duties because we have a certain psychophysiological nature and we're going to work in the world because we're active living beings and we have certain obligations to fulfill. And so he said you have a right to do that kind of work. He says, but so don't be attached to not doing your work. And he said also, don't be attached to the result of your work. But don't think I can stop work and not do it. Rather, as he says, jagnartak kamano nyatra lokayam karma bandana, that the world is created, especially for humans, to perform sacrifice. So do your work as a sacrifice for Krishna. And when you do that, then your work becomes the cause of your liberation. So he says further on in the ninth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, yet karoshi yad ashnashi yad juhoshi dadasi yat yet tapasyasi kantiyat tat kurushva mararpanam. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer and give away, do as a sacrifice for me, give it to me. So it's very practical philosophy in Bhagavad Gita. And don't be attached to the result. That fruit is something that you leave it up to the Supreme, just do the work that's prescribed for you. Very nice. Yes. Mukharvin, and then we'll finish the verse.
Maharaj, the Bhagavatam verse that you pointed out, that mind and sense object, so in the data mining, there's a very famous, this is one of the like technical data mining.
Data mining. Yes.
So there's a algorithm, frequent pattern, like it's called frequent pattern mining.
Frequent pattern mining.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in that they research that, okay, what things like, how Prabhupada was telling that this is what things we keep together, like bread, butter, and what are the things that goes together. So in this, I was thinking that this is the biggest data mining that we understand when mind and sense objects are together, like how to, and the solution of all that is the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra and implementing bhakti will be more successful in our life.
Okay, so run the analogy by me again. Do you understand how he understands? He gets it. Give it to him because I want to hear the re-explanation of it. Because it's a really valuable analogy.
So I think the example can be given that, you know...
Hold that like so it's almost touching your chin.
So mind is naturally attracted to the material sense objects.
Yes.
So similarly, you know, mind and senses can go together. So in the similar case what Prabhuji was mentioning is that, you know, if we understand that what goes together... it is the best data mining. Actually, you know, we spend so much energy in understanding data mining, but if we understand,
okay, expand it more.
Yeah, Hare Krishna Maharaj. So recently, since last 1 year, I've been working on machine learning and deep learning, and actually, deep learning is based on the structure of the mind. So there are neurons, and neurons actually from experience they learn. And mind actually does the same thing. So from our past births, we are learning that, you know, when you see this, you actually attracted towards that. And like when we, so basically we supply a new sample to the model and it predicts, you know, what will be the outcome. So I think when we see some new scene, it's basically a new sample to the mind, and mind will say, okay, do that. So I think that's
the mind will say what?
Do that. You know, it's like, you know, if you see this kind of scene, you're supposed to do this. So that learning is already there. It's a deep learning.
Deep learning. There's more. Keep going. We're really on to something here. Okay, say more.
So there is something called as, you know, you train the network. To train the neural
network.
So since Prabhuji said that, you know, it's based on the mind, so it's, you know, similarly, you know, we train the mind.
Yes.
So that we can, yeah. And then there's a, you know, teacher who actually tells you what's the right thing to do, and then similarly, you know, you have
this contemplation, and then you own it. It's very similar to, I don't know what it's called, but when you click on anything on the internet, and it comes back. Like if you look at a backpack, because it's like, I need a backpack. And you just look at it, you know, you go off for 10 seconds, you look at it and come back. For the next year, whatever page you go to, like, backpack, 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 backpack. How about this one? How about that one? This is the one you looked at. You still like it? How about in blue, you know? And that's a design that mimics the way the mind works, isn't it? It's a sort of deep learning that has been transferred into the realm of commerce, because the mind works like that anyway. You contemplate the object, and then it comes back to you. You think, I'm not interested anymore. But then the next day it comes back, hi, I'm back. Or what to speak if you engage with it? Because if you engage the sense and the sense objects, and you get some stimulation there, there's an experience in the mind. And then you might think, I'm walking away now. It's like, there was a lyric from a song, Tom Petty said, you can walk away, but it's not over. You know, you walk away, but it just comes back. It's like, hi, I'm back. It's like, hey, I walked away from you yesterday. That's right, I'm still back, you know. Like, so you have to be aware of the fact that we're in an environment that's really engineered like that. It's super engineered. And it's to teach us a lesson. One realization I've had is the way in which these anartas are deeply ingrained. You may practice bhakti for some years, and then you'll notice, wow, tip of the iceberg, there's anartas that go very deep, and they're extremely difficult to get rid of. And then you can understand that, first of all, don't mix it up with the material world, because you're going to add to that. But the other thing is, it's actually Krishna's mercy that they're so indelible. Because ultimately the only way to rid oneself of anartas is to completely surrender to Krishna. And once one realizes that it's actually impossible for me to remove these in any kind of artificial way, the only way that I can really get rid of it is to give myself to Krishna completely and say, Krishna, I can't do this. I'm not powerful enough. I've got so much debt in the material world, and the anartas are so deep as the ocean, that I leave it to you. And that's why Krishna says ultimately in the Gita, sarva dharman parityaja manekam sharanam braja ahantong sarva papi bhya mukshay shami masuchaha. If you really want to walk away from the material world and engage in bhakti, surrender to me completely. Just give up. Okay, so Shraddha, last one, and then we'll go back to the verse. I didn't even know what time it is, so there's no more clock in here. It's like in Las Vegas, they took all the clocks out, so you can just gamble all night. So we can just hear and chant, it's like, sorry, I didn't know what time it was. There's no clock, we couldn't stop.
So Maharaj, I'm still on the bread and butter.
Bread and butter.
Example, like, you know, when you think bread, then you will most likely think butter as well. And people use that gamefully to their advantage when they'll stock the bread or display the bread, they'll put the butter also next to it for better sale. So I was thinking that Krishna also does that in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where he says that uvach parth pasyatan samvetan kuruniti. So when Arjun says that, you know, pull the chariot in between the two armies, I want to see them, and Krishna pulls the chariot there, and then he says that, you know, look at them, because he knows that the moment the senses will engage with the relatives, then the whole thing will start again. The family will kill them and things like that.
Yeah.
Krishna was doing some deep machine
learning. That's true. Yeah. Okay, let's look at the second part of the verse. So Krishna says, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Krodha Bhajayate. So the Sangat, Sangat, from attachment, Sanjayate, develops, Kamaha, desire, Kamat, from desire, Krodha, anger, Abhijayate, becomes manifest. Okay, so this is a progression. While contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them. And from such attachment, lust develops, and from lust, anger arises. And here's the purport. One who is not Krishna conscious is subjected to material desires while contemplating the objects of the senses. The senses require real engagements, and if they are not engaged in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, they will certainly seek engagement in the service of materialism. In the material world, everyone, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, to say nothing of other demigods in the heavenly planets, is subjected to the influence of sense objects, and the only method to get out of this puzzle of material existence is to become Krishna conscious. Lord Shiva was deep in meditation, but when Parvati agitated him for sense pleasure, he agreed to the proposal, and as a result, Kartikeya was born. When Haridas Thakur was a young devotee of the Lord, he was similarly allured by the incarnation of Maya Devi, but Haridas easily passed the test because of his unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. As illustrated in the above-mentioned verse of Sri Jamunacharya, a sincere devotee of the Lord shuns all material sense enjoyment due to his higher taste for spiritual enjoyment in the association of the Lord. This is the secret of success. One who is not, therefore, in Krishna consciousness, however powerful he may be in controlling the senses by artificial repression, is sure ultimately to fail, for the slightest thought of sense pleasure will agitate him to gratify his desires. Okay. Any question? Yes?
How is it that Lord Shiva and Brahma, who are so exalted, and we also even say that Vaishnavana Yata Shambhu, but it feels so discouraging to know that they are subject to this distraction. But we are all not like Haridas Thakur, because he was just chanting, but we also have to work. So that even if Brahma and Shiva, who offer so eloquent prayers and focus on Krishna, even they become distracted, what's our hope?
It's only situational. So Brahma and Shiva have a lot of controlling to do. And when you are in contact with controlling energy, then you get affected by it. So Shiva and Brahma, they're slightly in touch with tamas and rajas for their duties. And Haridas Thakur is a nirapeksha Vaishnava. He doesn't have any other duty except to be a simple Vaishnava and set an example. And therefore, because of his situation, and he's shows the example that he's completely unaffected. And we see throughout the Bhagavatam as an example, Priyavrata, and I gave this example yesterday. You know, he was a pure devotee, and he had no other desire except to perform devotional service, but he had to get involved in management. And because of that situation, he became entangled. But then he became disentangled very easily. He was already given the blessing that he wouldn't become entangled, although it appeared he did. But then becoming disentangled was something that happened naturally. He came to his own realization that now I'm entangled, and then he disentangled himself. And that was situational also, as he had some interaction, some duties to do. So there are various situations that different devotees have when they're serving Krishna, and because of those, they may be affected in different ways. We also can draw the you know, special connection between Brahma and Haridas Thakur. And this is Brahma when he was doing his duty, and we see in Krishna Leela, he came down to see who is this cowherd boy, and then he thought, you know, how can this be? I mean, I know who the Supreme Personality of Godhead is, but this? And sort of in a light-hearted way, he stole away the boys and calves and so forth, and then Krishna revealed to him his ultimate power and glory, and then Brahma became extremely humble and gave up his Ishvara bhav, his bhav of, you know, his duty of controlling situationally, and then he took birth as Haridas Thakur. So he's called Brahma Haridas because he became so repentant from having misjudged Krishna from that Ishvara bhav that in his next life Krishna gave him a taste of this nirapeksha, being engaged in uninterrupted devotional service without any designation as a big controller or anything like that. Does that help? And it might also point out that Lord Shiva, when he becomes attracted to Mahinamurti and runs after her, and you know he has a discharge in front of all the other sages and everything like that, which is like, I mean, you couldn't think of anything more embarrassing, you know, for a sage. But he was happy because he said, just see, this proves that Krishna's the Supreme and I'm not. That was his ego, that I want to glorify Krishna. That they did intentionally. He actually was overcome by the beauty of Mahinamurti and chased after her. And, you know, he really lost it. And, you know, in front of everybody. But he didn't become envious, and he also didn't become morose, that look, you know, I've revealed that I'm a fallen thing. He was like, see, it proves it, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he became happy to say, like, see how powerful he is? That even me, Shiva, I'm overcome by his power. So these things are nuances that are explained in the Bhagavatam in different ways. Is that help? Okay.
Follow-up. See, I understand like how Haridas Thakur was like that and Shiva, and it's situational. But what is the one thing that will make us who are still beginners to be immune? Of course we will fall down, get up like that. But how do we prolong the... Is that possible only to prolong?
Well, first of all, you shouldn't be discouraged because even the demigods say, I'd like to be human in Bhumandala. It's actually the most advantageous position because we're pretty lowly creatures. And we're just humans. And people say it all the time. You're just human. But a couple things. It says in the 11th canto, Krishna likes humans. So cheer up. Krishna likes you. So that's one thing. The other thing is, in the middle, I've said this many times, but it bears repeating that, you know, the situation we're in now is really good because we're in the middle of the universe. It's not heavenly. Demigods, they get carried away because they have so much. We don't get so carried away. It's kind of a struggle for us here. Yes?
Yes.
Oh, good. And in that struggle, you know, we kind of take shelter of Krishna. And we can perform yajna here. We can actually dedicate most of our time and energy and resources to yajna, and then we become happy. Jagnartak kamano nyatra. And this is proven several times in the Bhagavatam where demigods, it's in the 5th canto and 11th canto, where the demigods are praying to take birth here so that they can take more advantage of just being unremarkable living entities who just surrender to Krishna. I mean, really, we're designed just to take shelter of Krishna, and you're not expected to do much more, because we can't. We don't have much power. I mean, controlling things like even running a little community or thinking how to build something, it's like, it boggles the mind. Unless, you know, there's a few super people around, they can build a big skyscraper, but who cares anyway? You know, it's just tiny, it gets knocked over with the next earthquake. There's not a lot that humans can do. So, you know, we kind of by default, you know, our thing is just take shelter of Krishna. And if you can get that bhav and just be a nirapeksha and niskinchanasya bhagavat bhajano mukasya, be niskinchana, like I don't have anything. What do you expect from me? I'm just a human. I'm just going to take shelter of Krishna. I can't really do anything except for a little yajna, and that's enough, Krishna says. Patram pushpam. If you're a human, you know, you can't do anything, but just offer me a little flower or food or something like that, and I'll be satisfied with the bhakti. But demigods, they're like, you know, God, you could create a universe. It's really hard to resist that. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night, I'm going to create something. You really get distracted. I can fly around and all this stuff. No cities that we have, per se. We're just kind of born vanilla, plain. Simple human beings. Krishna likes that. It's like, okay, you're human? Do some simple bhakti and you'll be satisfied. No extra strain involved. So it's very optimistic. It's better. You're in the best position, actually. Couldn't be better. Yes.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I had a question on how do you offer the results to Krishna? Does it mean that I don't have to worry about the results but just do my best? Or do I start with the conscious understanding that whatever I have right now is what Krishna has given me, so there is a duty, or the kind of work I'm doing is very important to this world. Is that how I offer my results?
Yeah, well, both things are there. The acharyas say when you're doing your work, you should think, this is work assigned to me by Krishna, and therefore I'm doing it for him. But you should also give the results. So it's just like you can say, I'm working for Krishna, but then you keep everything.
Right.
No, try to set aside a certain amount to give to Krishna, especially to spread the Sankirtan movement. The Prabhupada emphasizes this. You know, you put that in the yajna, like we do here. This is a good situation at ISV because we have all these yajnas where everyone can donate. We have something to donate to that actually you have faith in it. Because you see it happening right in front of you. You know, the money's not getting wasted. It's already allotted. They're already crying for more money, you know, because we got so many books to distribute, right? And, you know, if you study it a little bit, you can find out what's the best kind of sacrifice you can do. Krishna says in the Gita, sacrifice of knowledge and giving knowledge to other people. It's better than any other kind of sacrifice, really. And so when you do that, and then you're lined up, and you say, okay, I earned $1,000. Let me, okay, I'll give five. No, I'll give four. It was $350, you know, the mind's going like it. And then, you know, somehow or other, you're able to pry away some of it, and whatever percentage it is, and you give that physically. You know, that represents your hard work. It's just paper. You know, one way or another, you're signing over some paper, it's a few digits online, but it represents the hard work you put in. So that's tangible. You can actually hand it over, and when you do that, then you'll be connected in that way, this karma yoga, to be able to do like that. And then also, that helps you to think, like, I'm doing this for Krishna, so I'm giving, you know, some of my income. So that helps. Yeah. If you do it mentally, then you have to eat mentally too. One of my godbrothers taught me that. We were walking around Vrindavan one day doing the parikram many years ago, and he said, that's a desire tree over there. I want to walk. It was way out of the way, you know. It's like, I'm in a hurry. I want to get back for Guru Puja and stuff like that. And he said, I'll just go around it mentally. And he goes, that's fine, as long as when we get back for prasadam, we eat mentally too. I'm going to look at my watch because there's no more clock on the wall. Okay, any more questions?
So we should not contemplate on the objects of our senses.
Well,
right?
We have to contemplate because it's our nature. But if you get engaged in yajna, which means that your life is centered around service to your spiritual master in the disciplic succession, you have a bona fide service to do. Then when you start looking at the world, you think of it in terms of how you contemplate it, but you're contemplating like, how could I use this to please Krishna? So, you know, people, they drive around. Like, say if you drive from here to LA and you take Route 101, You could drive through and you see these little hamlets along the coast and you think, hey, what if I live there, you know? I'd wake up, see the ocean, I'd be all happy, and I'd see a whale, and then, it's so romantic, and blah, blah, blah. And, you're contemplating the material world, like how nice it could be, you know, if I just lived here. And but when you're engaged in yajna, then you look around and you go like, God, that's a good sankirtan spot. I got to notice that. We're going to go door to door when we come back next time. And you say, oh, that place, that's a property. We could use that to build a temple. So we have to contemplate. You can't stop contemplating. But if you contemplate for Krishna and you're engaged enough in yajna so that everything you see, your contemplation gets absorbed in thinking, like, how can I offer this to Krishna? How can I give this to my guru? Then this all becomes yajna. Brahmarpanam brahmahavir brahmagnau brahmanohutam brahmaiva tena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. Krishna says, through connecting everything, not that you give it all up, but you use it all for the yajna. And all the material, so-called material objects that you use for yajna, they become transcendentalized. Hare Krishna.
What's that? Sundarananda. Well, we definitely have to hear what Sundarananda Prabhu says.
So it's from a previous topic when Gandharvika Mataji was talking about how to destroy the samskaras. So he has submitted a verse in shloka and evidence.
Oh, please.
Yeah. So this is from Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, 1st chapter, verse number 15. Kechit kevalaya bhakta, that verse.
Kechit kevalaya bhaktya vasudeva parayana agam dunvanti kartsneena nihara iva bhaskara. So this one means that kechit kevalaya bhaktya, sometimes kechit kevalaya bhaktya, people engage in this one-pointed pure devotional service, vasudeva parayana, and agam dundvanti kasneya, the process of bhakti is so powerful that these anartas are like fog, but when bhaskara comes, the sun, then the fog is easily burned off. So similarly, when the holy name and the impetus for pure devotional service appears in our heart, then these anartas are easily burned away.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Thank you everyone for coming to listen to the Bhagavad Gita and discuss. And now we're going to have an Artik ceremony. We'll clear out the asanas and everyone's free to dance. If you like, highly recommended activity, dance for Krishna. So we'll have a kirtan in Bengali. We'll sing in Bengali mostly. And then it's a beautiful song about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates standing on the bank of the Ganga. How beautiful they are and how merciful, and all his associates. So we'll sing that song, and feel free to let yourself go in spiritual rapture and dance to your heart's content. Okay? Okay, three people said okay. Okay. Vanchakopdi Visha Kripasandeva Chapatitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namahanantakuti Vaishnaviniki Jai. And thanks to everybody who joined us online. Everyone, please turn towards the camera and say Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Hey! Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman. Nacharyar Marman.